Ladies and gentlemen, friends and open-minded people, wherever you live, across the United States of America, Europe, and the world, this is David Duke, and this is Human Rights Radio. And I would like to remind you folks that we can't take credit card charges right now. If you want to order something from my website, you need to write it down, the price, the postage, whatever, and you have to send it in by snail mail. I am very sorry that you have to go to that trouble to send us a contribution or to buy a book or anything like that. We don't have My Awakening in right now. We're also out of stock with The Secret Behind Communism, but we have lots of great copies, fantastic mint copies of Jewish supremacism. The term, by the way, that's being used in Jewish supremacy, increasingly, not only among right-wing people, conservatives or new right people or alt-right people, but it's also being used by the left today. And it's really amazing to see this process. Now, this was a term, I read this article in the Jerusalem Post that said this term actually came from the National Socialists or the Germans. It didn't. It really didn't. And what they say to justify that is they say some Hitler Youth film or something had some translation that's approximating it. No. The truth is that I developed the term because I knew that what they say about white people, both in Europe and America and Great Britain and around the world, what they say about us is that we're white supremacists. We don't call ourselves white supremacists because we're not white supremacists. A supremacist is somebody who wants to control other people's nations, other people's lands. There are supremacists in this world, and they control the government of the United States, and they've taken over this government because they control. They have supremacy over the United States State Department. They have had for a long time. They are trying to take the world under this globalism centered from American corporations, American media, American banking institutions, and other Jewish powers around the world. This is a reality. It's the globalist movement is overwhelmingly Jewish, just as the communist movement was overwhelmingly Jewish. The Jewish role, for instance, in the founding of the United Nations, even before that with the League of Nations, is overwhelmingly Jews. In fact, I've talked about that in some of my shows recently. We talked about the founding of the United Nations. I've recently talked about the World Economic Forum, which actually the whole roots of the World Economic Forum came from Jews and Jewish supremacists, Jewish supremacy. In fact, Charles Schwab was a German engineer. He wasn't Jewish. And Jews, after the Second World War, became very, very concerned about Russia, which was rapidly becoming Russia again rather than the Soviet Union, because underneath the overlay of what's called communism, the Russians were taking back control over the country. Once they started to take back control of the Presidium and the Politburo and the Duma, and even in the 1950s, people like Khrushchev were giving speeches about the mass murders of the Bolsheviks. And finally, they won, and they dissolved the Warsaw Pact, and they ultimately even took down the symbols of communism. They replaced the hammer and sickle with a Russian flag, Russian colors, Russian nationalism. And that's because they removed the driving force of communism from their government, from their influence, overwhelmingly so. Now, Jews still had a great deal of activity in the organized criminal behavior of the country. They had what was called the Red Mafia. But it wasn't a Russian mafia, folks. It was actually a Jewish mafia. That's the reality of it. And there's many books on the subject that you can find out. So the Russians overthrew communism. They stopped outlawing the Christian church. They even passed laws against Zionism, seeing it as an anti-Russian group, a danger to Russia, people with loyalty to another country, which, of course, Zionists are the most radical loyalists. It's an international Jewish ethnic nationalism, but it's on a global basis. It's amazing. I mean, a good example was the chief of staff of none other than Obama when he began his presidency, Rahm Emanuel. Now, Rahm Emanuel, as a young man, went to fight in the army. He went to fight for his country. But guess what? Rahm Emanuel, the guy who became the chief of staff of the president of the United States, didn't go fight in the American Army. He didn't go fight in these wars like Iraq and Afghanistan, which were produced by Jewish neocons overwhelmingly. And the Jewish New York Times and the Jewish NBC, ABC, CBS, CNN, and all the rest. No. He went and fought or worked with the Israeli military. Israeli prisons. I guess he wanted to torture some Palestinians. That's his loyalty was. And that's exactly whose loyalty is the chief of staff of the present Democratic government under Biden. It's Ron Klain, big Zionist, all for the war in Iraq, a war based on bald-faced lies. It was all lies. You know, yesterday I had an interesting show, and I want to bring on, let me go ahead and bring on before I make any more comments, and we're going to get into another subject today of anti-white racism and where it's coming from. And yes, you often hear it voiced by black newscasters or black pundits and so forth on television. But the people that run television, the people that run television news, the people that run these television networks, people that run, you know, even the New York Times, they're not black people. They're not the ones who run. They're not the ones who make the decisions to hire and fire. It's Jews. And they are producing this narrative, even in this killing of police officers in Memphis, Tennessee, or this killing by police officers in Memphis, Tennessee, that this is white racism, that these people are white, these blacks that committed this killing are white racists. No. No. It looks like they committed some criminal behaviors on somebody that may have been innocent, may not. I don't know the situation, but it certainly wasn't according to the laws of jurisprudence and justice, for sure. But, you know, it's not much different, really. Even though they were police officers, they broke the law. They did kill somebody. They did beat somebody. Apparently, that's what it looks like anyway, even though we can't judge definitely till we see the jury. But they did this. Maybe that's not an example of white racism. Maybe it's an example of black criminality. I hate to say that. But the truth is that black people are not being killed by white police officers. They're being killed overwhelmingly in this country by black people. And let me tell you something, folks. They kill a lot of white people, too, a lot of innocent white people. I'm not talking about white criminals, like black criminals are often killing each other, but also a lot of blacks just wholesale in their communities. But they're killing a lot of innocent people. They're raping a lot of innocent women, wives and mothers, children. They're committing terrible crimes, shooting people on the street, robbing people on the street, beating people on the street. And the Department of Justice of this country keeps facts and figures about cross-racial crime, or they used to. They're trying to hide these figures now because they're so damning, but they really show about 567,000 white people who've been victims of black, naked, horrific violence, robbery, rape, assault, murder, you know, serious assault, brain injury, crippling, blinding. I mean, it's amazing. And by the way, they're not just attacking white people, they're also attacking Asian people. And yet they act like this is kind of racism too, and the race, no, it is kind of racism in the sense that it's coming, this crime is overwhelmingly coming from a particular race. But we're going to get into that subject, but first let me go ahead and bring on Paul Stevens. It's been a while since we had him on. I'm so glad to have him back. I made a couple trips to I think Italy and a few other places around Europe, and he's back just going down there and seeing some friends and doing some personal things. But he is really a great spokesman for some of the ideas you represent, and he is really a magnificent day and night activist for the rights of all people, and that includes the rights of the British people, and the European people, and even the American people, Europeans all over the world, as well as every people, to have freedom, to live in a healthy, sane country of high values. And that is something you've got to say for people, because today it's not easy to do that. I mean, you can really be hurt by this society. You can lose jobs, you lose opportunities. Hey, you can't get critical. If you want to write a book and you want to sell it, or you want to do a newsletter, you can't even use the modicum of exchange, you know, the internet, to use a credit card to go out and buy it, because you're banned, because the Jews who run those banks and the Jews who run our media and the Jews who run the establishment of this Western world are Jews, and they don't want anybody to be able to express ideas that we don't like. Even Kanye West, you know, said that. He said, yeah, they didn't like the fact, I mean, here I am, a billionaire black person. I thought I would have rights then. I thought I would have the ability to say what I want and support who I wanted for president. But I found out from my Jewish handlers that I couldn't support Donald Trump for president, that they would hurt me and they threatened me. And they did, of course. They even tried to destroy his marriage. And the New York Times was bragging about that. Anyway, let me go to Paul Stevenson. I'm sorry I waxed on a little long there, Paul, but I'm so glad to have you back on.
It's great to be with you, David. I think the last time we did a show was sort of near the end of December over the Christmas period. So it's great to be back on with you again.
Yeah, I'm really glad to be with you today. And we're going to go two subjects today. The first part of the show, we're going to talk about these killings. And I know that there's a lot of anti-white. In America, we call massive institutionalized racial discrimination against white people, we call that, quote, affirmative action, unquote, affirmative action. It's amazing how they use all these nice words as a way of propaganda, as a way to psychologically condition us for the agenda that they want.
Yeah,
they call, they call illegal aliens, and that's a perfect term. Aliens have always been used as a term to define someone who's not a national of that country. He's an alien. And we have alien laws of immigration, alien laws of, you know, passports, visas, so forth, right? And citizenship. And that's always been a perfectly legal and proper term. It's been used for white people for years. Anybody's another country, another nationality. And now in America, what you'll hear on the news is not, they never use, they don't dare use illegal aliens. They'll say undocumented worker. They're not undocumented worker. They're people who've broken the law. They have illegally broken the law. And if you or I try to, say we go in an airport and we try to sneak around or go through a door, break a door or somewhere else and try to get out into the country or into the airport or into London or whatever at an airport and not go through customs, we're in big trouble. You're facing prison sentences for that, right? But we have millions of, quote, illegal aliens, and that's the term that I will continue to use, break our laws, knowingly. They know the laws, try to evade detection, get in this country legally, don't go through customs, don't go through immigration, just that itself. You know, people, we have laws against people going around customs or trying to avoid customs or illegally entering the country for one reason why. Is because we want to know what they're bringing in. Are they bringing in any dangerous materials that we don't allow in America? Are they bringing in any radioactive materials? Like, are they terrorists?
Or what's their history? I mean, we had a great example over here where there's a kid killed. There was an illegal immigrant, came over here in the boat, killed a guy down in, I think it was Bournemouth. And then they look at his history. They finally do some research, and this guy got into the country pretending he was a 16-year-old. He was actually 21. Right. This guy's been killing people all over Europe and changing his name. And, you know, he ends up here and he killed someone again. I think he killed three people. Certainly, I think one in Switzerland and one in Norway, if I'm correct. But two places in Europe. Then he skipped the country. So we're just allowing whoever in here, you know. It's the same as coming across the southern border. You know, it's the same here. We need to protect our borders from what's crossing across the English Channel. You guys need to secure your borders in the southern border there, but instead we're obsessed with the Ukrainian border and their integrity and their borders.
Yes, it's amazing, right? And the percentages of illegals in the federal prisons of this country, and even in terms of the non-federal prisons, the state prisons for state crimes, is amazingly high. I mean, it's like 30 or 40%. It varies, but it's massive numbers. So, yes, we have also an interest to see who's coming into the country. If they're a serial killer, if they're, you know, if they're a terrorist, or for that matter, if they're bringing in drugs. And if you're not going through immigration, obviously, and you got drugs on you, or you're smuggling drugs into the country. And fentanyl now is an incredible epidemic in our country. And it's coming in massively from Mexico over our border. And we had 110,000, I believe, deaths of overdose from fentanyl. It's a very, very dangerous drug. And it's hard to tell how powerful it is. It's hard to tell how much people consume. And it's much more powerful and likely to kill you than heroin or any of these other kind of drugs, or even cocaine. It's an extremely dangerous drug. And they often put this fentanyl in other drugs. And so they can put less of the drugs that are more expensive and put this very cheaply made drug, fentanyl, into these drugs. And so people take some. They think they're getting a low amount of a legal drug, or they just, you know, or they get a fentanyl that's not properly made, but they're just sold because how are people going to know until they take it? And when you're not going through a pharmacy where they're regulating, you know, the content or checking the content of the drugs or the pharmaceuticals before you take them, they take it and they drop dead. Or they have enormous damage to their organs, to their brain, to their heart, to their liver, to their kidneys, to their body. And so it turns people into vegetables. It turns people into having lifelong issues. It turns people, you know, to be hospitalized often and have great damage to their brains and to their intelligence and their futures when they become wards of the state, and they can cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to keep them alive. And we have a government that's dedicated to keeping anybody alive, criminal or not. And that's kind of normal. That's part of Western values. And in a normal situation, we're all for that, right? But it's like, this is the kind of thing that goes on, which is a tremendous cost to society and a danger to society. And by the way, we should also point out that one of the reasons for the fentanyl epidemic, this mass murder, 110,000 people, that's double the 11 years of the Vietnam War and Afghanistan War.
That's about how many Ukrainians have died in the war so far.
Yeah, it's an unbelievable thing. And yet it's not a big issue. Because for one reason, we have a media, we have a Jewish Hollywood media that promotes getting high on drugs. It promotes it again and again every day. And it aims most of these movies for kids. And it also promotes, I must say, and even though, you know, most people drink or have an occasional drink, and it's one thing to have a drink or a beer or wine or, for that matter, a Kentucky bourbon or something once in a while. It's one thing to do that. But we have a culture, the Jewish culture, that really goes overboard in movies and programs to celebrate drinking, to celebrate abusing drugs. How many times, I guess you watch movies from time to time. I certainly have all my life. I kind of enjoyed them. And, of course, over the time since I've been about 12 or 13, when I start becoming awake to what's going on, whenever I watched them, it was interesting because I always noticed what they were promoting to our kids. I didn't even drink at all. Then I hardly even have a beer. If I average 2 beers in a month, you know, I feel like I've gone over the line. But, you know, it's just like crazy. But how many times I've seen movies, and these are movies often directed toward young people. They're comedies and they're serious movies and so forth. And they conspicuously show a young kid in high school smoking marijuana. That is a serious drug. It's even a more dangerous drug than alcohol, in the sense that it, unlike alcohol, which goes to the digestive system, it has a much less dangerous effect on the brain. It goes right to the brain. And when you use it a lot, it can definitely affect your motivation. It can affect your whole life. It can affect your whole personality. It's a horrible thing.
I would agree that it's worse because it's more insidious, because you can function much more easily with it. If someone gets really, really drunk, and this is a pattern, usually it becomes a problem quite quickly. There'll be fights. There'll be some sort of drama. There'll be problems. There'll be whatever. But you know, I remember working for a gardening company, the first gardening company I worked for, and all the kids were high in this stuff. And I tried a little bit of it, and it was really, really nice. And it was like, but I realized the danger in it immediately, because I thought, this is like rose-tinted glasses. You can function with this, but it changes the world in a subtle way. It's hard to explain, but it sort of, it makes everything a little bit more interesting. And these kids, when they weren't smoking, you know, when they couldn't smoke, their whole personalities changed. They were miserable. They spent the whole day looking for it. They were spending all their wages on it. I mean, it really is a real big problem. But, you know, even in America, I saw Chris Sims. I like the American football. You know, in America now, it's becoming legalized in a lot more places. And, you know, he talks about it and he smokes it and it's all kind of blasé. But for everybody that maybe the Chris Sims who can afford it and maybe he can deal with it, there's a lot of people out there who are addicted to that stuff. And again, it's like alcohol. Compared to alcohol, people can realize much quicker that they've got a problem with it. But this stuff, I've had friends of mine who say, no, I'm not addicted to it, and they're functioning all the time. Yeah. And then there's maybe 3 or 4 days where they don't get it. And then you say, are you sure you're not addicted to this stuff? Because you're going crazy. You're irritable. You're miserable. You're driving all over the town looking for this stuff.
It even shows psychotic episodes a lot.
Sure, it does, of course. It does. Yeah, it does.
I wrote about this in My Awakening and in my biography. I guess my magnum opus of my writings. I'm doing an update on that now. It's not done yet, but hopefully it'll get out there, and hopefully we'll have the money to print it with all the cutting of the credit cards and all the fact that I can't even sell my books on Amazon. You get Leon Trotsky's, Lev Bronstein's, you know, communist books about terrorism, for instance, promoting it, and all sorts of other things like that. You can get pedophilia books on Amazon, but you can't buy my books, even though it's academic, 1,000 footnotes. There's no hatred in it. There's no urge to any sort of violence. And there's no hate in it at all. In fact, I make my case that there is, among Jews, a endemic racism. It's the same case or a similar case that they make to white people, that we're endemically racist, that we're white supremacists and all that kind of thing. But I believe that they're real and most powerful supremacist doctrine in the history of the world has been Judaism. It's even the religion is based on your blood, and it's based on the idea that God favors you over anybody else. That's ultimate supremacy, if you really think about it, that everybody else is second class citizens. Jews are the chosen of God. And they even believe in the Halakha that Jews are from the Talmud. They even believe that they are the tissue and issue of God. And rabbis write about this. And they also say incredibly hateful things about non-Jews, such as a perfect example, if you look at the Jewish Encyclopedia, which is a compendium of articles about Judaism and Jews and so forth around the world by the leading Jewish organizations, including secular and religious, of the world. And you look in that Jewish Encyclopedia, they have a whole section on pages and pages on Gentiles. And it explains in that section, and you can find this in the Talmud too, but you know, let's look at the Jewish Encyclopedia, which makes it real simple for people. It says in that area that how that the Talmud fundamentally says that non-Jews are not people, that they're not men. Only Jews are men. And it also explains that all non-Jews are tainted. They're evil. They have evil souls. They're unclean. It's like they're monsters. I mean, it's like you can't even drink from the same wine bottle, even if you're not doing with your lips to the bottle. I mean, if you're drinking in different, you can't even drink from the same wine bottle. That's how evil Gentiles are. They also say that women are evil too. They say that, they literally say that a woman, when they have a child, their menstruation, they say that women, because they menstruate, this is unclean, and these women are unclean. You can't even touch them for a week or two. If they have a baby and they have a male baby, they're unclean for a week. But they have a female baby, they're unclean for 2 weeks. And the Jewish prayer, which is still uttered in synagogues all over the world, in Orthodox Judaism, is that, God, thank you for not making me a woman, for not making me a goy, a non-Jew. You know, God, thank you for that. I mean, you can't make this up. But these are the kind of things that go on. So I've exposed a lot of racism, and even they even have B'Tselem, which is a Jewish organization in Israel run by Jews, some famous Jews, by the way. And they themselves, I call them, those kind of Jews, righteous Jews. And they've adopted the word that I've made on the Jewish question. I call it Jewish supremacy. Because, and I did this because I, you know, I grew up in the 1950s, 60s, 70s, and they were constantly talking about white supremacy, which was defined as somebody who was racist and who believes whites were supreme, should be, say, should rule over everybody else. They should.
Well, Merrick Garland was talking about it recently. He publicly said it, didn't he? About the tail end of last year, he came out and said it openly. He's
the greatest threat to America is white supremacy.
Yeah, yes, yes, yes. They don't even try and hide it.
It's ridiculous. It's not white supremacists who control the major corporations. It's not white supremacists who control the media. It's not white supremacists who control government immigration policy. If it was white people, even, you know, even if it was simply, if it was, and this is the whole point, this is what they always do. They always stretch every truth, and they lie about things, and they make up names for us that don't correspond to us. For if a white person wants to defend his identity, his heritage, his race, his traditions, his values, his ancestors, and he lauds his ancestors and wants to preserve his ancestors and doesn't want to become intentionally made minorities in his country by the people who control the immigration policy and then flood the country with non-whites, so in a democracy they're outvoted, they're changing the debate, they're changing the laws by simply packing the room with people who are not like the people who founded the country. So it's not you're not a supremacist, you're not even a racist by simply wanting to preserve your own heritage and your values, because racism and supremacism is defined as oppressing other people, hurting other people. And we're going to go into that right now. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, in many ways, what Putin is trying to do is to preserve, you know, the Russian people and the Russian Orthodox Church and the Russian identity. And he doesn't want to sign on to this nonsense that we're experiencing, the degeneracy that we're experiencing in the West. So, you know, he's got a target on his back, because how else do you explain it? I mean, how is it in our interest here in the UK, who've been shamelessly taking a leading role in this hatred towards Russia? What have Russia done on us? I mean, this is not the Soviet Union. You know, so he just wants to preserve it. Exactly.
Yeah. We're going to get in the last part of the show, but yeah, they've done nothing. And it's not anybody look at a map, look at the world, look at all the European countries, look at the Baltic states, look at Finland, look at Poland, look at Hungary, even look at Ukraine, which was part of the Russian, you know, it was part of the Soviet Union. And, you know, I mean, it's a country that cuts into them. And here we have NATO trying to control it and have missiles on their doorstep. Now,
or
the Crimea,
yeah, which was never really,
hundreds
it was
of
always
years ago.
Russian.
Yeah,
yeah, of course the Crimea was always Russian.
It was always Russian. And by the way, if not for the Russians, the Kievan Rus, which were Russians, as well as the people of Ukraine and Russia, they're really the same people. That's how these Jews work. They try to make whatever small differences are between us a matter of contention, and then by divide and conquer, they destroy us. They do the same thing politically. They divide us men, women, and men and women, rather than a common goal for our people. They divide us Republican, you know, Democrat. They divide us liberal, conservative. They divide us abortion, pro-abortion. They divide us every way they can. Then they exacerbate those differences and those particular issues to divide our vote, while they get all these groups on their side, you know, by basically motivating the groups that they want to vote for their candidate rather than the other candidate on these one or two issues that may be very important and certainly important to the people that care about them. But it's also, it's like nothing. Like the Christians who, you know, who don't like abortion, obviously, if they don't like abortion, they have to understand that when you have a non-Christian country and you have immigration that's changing it and you have a media that's constantly demonizing Christianity and telling us that Christians are racists and horrible and anti-Semitic and all these other things, and promoting, you know, Jewish issues and Jewish power in the country, which has always been a very, very anti-Christian religion that claims that Christians have done nothing but oppress them and hurt them their whole lives, and these are the people who control our media, you're going to lose the values of the country, not just on the abortion issue, but on any other issue that's important to Christians, morality, the issue of marriage, and the specialness of marriage and the importance of marriage and the importance of family and all these other Christian traditional values, you know, and that's exactly what is going on now. But okay, let's go, let's just start.
Well, as the scripture, as the scriptures say, if the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do? And they are well on the way to, of having destroyed the foundations of Christianity and the Christian spine of the West, you know.
Yeah. And I know there, I know good Christians, and I know people that aren't Christian who are very much fighting, you know, for our people and our heritage, and they are for the same things that would allow the Christian people to have their religious values and their traditions,
of course,
and their Christmas, you know. But the Jews are dedicated into getting rid of those things. I mean, it's, and I always say this, we passed Christmas already this year, and we passed Hanukkah. Hanukkah is now talked about practically as much as Christmas. You know, you can have a giant Jewish menorah and you can celebrate the massacre that took place, celebrated by Hanukkah way back a couple thousand years ago. You can celebrate that massacre of Jews and Greeks and Syrians, right? Not because they were trying to kill Jews, but because they were accepting Jews and assimilating with Jews. And that's exactly the truth, right? And they can put big Jewish ceremonies, they lighted the world's giant menorah in a religious ceremony with these rabbis and so forth. But at the same time, they get a Supreme Court decision that says that if you have any Christian symbols like a cross or a manger scene, maybe at Christmas or, you know, whatever, that, oh my God, you're going to, You can't put that up on a public ground. You can't put that up on a federal ground, not in front of the White House on the Ellipse. You can't put that up on a local county courthouse. You can't put it on in a national park, in a mountaintop, a Christian cross on a mountaintop. Oh, no, that's not allowed because religion is separated. But you can put up giant menorahs. That's legal. And that same Supreme Court decision of 1989, sponsored by Jewish groups like the American Jewish Committee and Jewish-controlled ACLU and many other groups, in that same decision that they promoted, which was done by the Supreme Court of the United States, that decision made it illegal to have a Christian symbol on public ground, even Christmas, even a Christmas manger scene, or any, you know, any celebration of Christ or Christian ceremony, you know, or even, and often you can't even have Christmas carols in schools, you can't have Christmas prayers in schools, you can't even call it Christmas holidays anymore. You know, you can celebrate Hanukkah in the schools. You can celebrate, my God, what are the blacks called it now, which was created by, it was a totally fake celebration, Kwanzaa. But you can't say Merry Christmas. You can't have a Merry Christmas. So, you know, this is reality. But that same decision, the same decision to show you how blatant this Jewish power, the tyranny of this Jewish power is. That same decision says, oh, you can't have a Christian symbol up in an overwhelmingly 85% Christian country when that was passed. But you can have a giant Jewish menorah which celebrates Jewish racism, literally, which celebrates Jews trying to preserve their race and killing any Jew that mixed with non-Jewish Greeks or Syrians or non-Jews, who accepted them into their institutions and to their academies, their universities, accepted them into business, even accepted them into their families if some Jews wanted to intermarry. You know, they went out and killed these people, not because they were killing Jews, but this is a racist symbol. It's a racist religion. You can have giant menorahs up. And the fact that 99.9% of the American people, including those Christians who've been so duped by the powers of the Jewish control over our media, 99% of all Christians don't even realize this. They don't even know this fact. So let's go into the race thing first. So I'm going to play you a section from Tucker Carlson. It's very short. It's just a couple of minutes. But it shows you the incredible racism against white people going on in this country. Now, I want to put this into perspective here. He's going to quote to you from both white and black commentators on major powerful media in the country, how these black cops were just a bunch of, you know, they were just acting for white supremacy, right? So I'm going to play this for you, but it's but I must make the point is, when you hear some of these blacks and these other people, this is not the source of this power in media to do this kind of thing is not coming from blacks. The people that told blacks they were being killed by police, which is a lie. Whites are far more killed by police than blacks, even though blacks commit far more murders and serious armed robberies than whites do, way more. But more whites are killed per capita than police kill blacks, right? And black police officers, which we're going to go into in a minute, are much more likely to kill blacks than white police officers are. And blacks kill 7 or 8 or 9 white people and injure white people in violent crime by blacks, black criminals, then whites kill blacks. Everything they tell you is a lie. But let me play this for you. Here we go.
Great to see you tonight.
Thank you, too. So the race riots of 2020, of course, were never about George Floyd. Obviously, that's why there were statues of him in American cities. They were about changing the country forever. And the first step, of course, was defunding police departments across the country and forcing them to lower their standards to attract unqualified applicants, hiring officers based on skin color rather than integrity or skill or self-control, all in the name of equity. Now, does that result in better policing? Well, what happened in Memphis a few weeks ago is one indicator. At least 2 of the 5 officers who apparently beat Tyree Nicholas to death were hired under lax diversity-driven standards, their affirmative action hires. And yet, instead of admitting that, and it's true, the media are diverting attention from this fact by accusing these 5 officers, who are all black, of somehow being white supremacists.
Let's just pause it right there, Paul. You know, there's a lot to unpack there, right? And you got to commend Tucker for talking about this. Of course, he's not going to talk about these people on we're going to hear the people in a second. We're not going to talk about the people who are all on Jewish-controlled networks, right? And Jewish-controlled news bosses like NBC is one of the guys, and that's Oppenheim who controls that. And the big company overhead of it, which determines what all your top people are going to be, is by Comcast, which controls MSNBC, NBC, CNBC, and a lot more. It's really crazy, but that's just the reality. So he talked about the fact that we have lowered the qualifications for police officers. In fact, in many cities, it used to be that if somebody went to apply to be a policeman, if they had any criminal sort of record on their background, they wouldn't hire them. Well, it kind of makes sense. If you got somebody who's got a criminal record, who's committed crimes, when you put police officers on the street with half criminal records, the possibility for corruption, bribery, and all sorts of other things are amazing. I remember an article in the Times-Picayune in New Orleans, our Jewish-controlled, you know, newspaper, at least for years and years and years, under the Newhouse chain. We used to call it the Jew House chain. But they did do a big story on criminal production in the police department. And they showed 2 pages, huge, normal newspaper-sized pages, with about 50 or 60 of the officers who were caught and prosecuted for criminal, vile behavior, drug running, prostitution, in terms of prostitution, grooming, and everything. Everything that you could, murder, assault. One black police officer woman killed another white police officer who had a good family and everything, murdered him in a scheme that she had went to rob a restaurant with some other people, and she murdered him. I mean, but in this page of 52 officers that were caught committing violent, vile, vicious crimes, they were all black, yet blacks were only a minority of the department's, you know, police officers. Interesting stuff, right? And so when you let people in, and
that's what they're predictable doing as well.
It's very predictable, right? And so maybe this, you know, it looks like from the, as I said earlier, it looks like from the tape, it looks like, you know, we don't know all the circumstances. We don't know what that guy did that made them so mad. You don't know what you do. They might have been kicking them in the, you know, in the genitals or something. He may have been, you know, spitting in their face or whatever. And people get upset about that. But you got to control yourself if you're a police officer. But he was apparently beaten. He did was beaten, and he died from the wounds. By the way, it was a lot less violent and a lot less, you know,
than Derek Chauvin.
Yeah, exactly.
I was thinking exactly the same thing when I looked at it. I thought, you compare that to what Derek Chauvin, you know, isn't it rotting in prison for the rest of his life?
He was doing exactly what they prescribe in the manual in their training. When you have somebody that's acting crazy and being violent, to restrain them. And the guy wouldn't have died except for the fact that he had a death amount of fentanyl and coke and everything. And I mean, it's just amazing. He had so much drugs in his system. And sure, that was a deathly dose of it. And, you know, I mean,
that alone should have been enough for the prosecution. There's right, reasonable doubt.
Exactly. And he was violent. And the guy was just trying to restrain. And he wouldn't even have died if the ambulances would not have taken a wrong turn. They called the ambulance. They wanted people to come and get him. They thought they were going to be with him a minute or two. He obviously didn't realize it was killing anybody. But I mean, but those officers, they had to know better. So maybe it's not about white supremacy. Maybe it's about black criminality. What do you think?
That's a very left field idea. I'd have to give that some thought.
Our tendency toward it, right? Blacks in our society tend to be more violent than whites?
We know the answer to that.
Nine times more violent black activities than white activities, right?
Yes. I mean, you don't have to sort of have any feelings about that to acknowledge it as a reality, you know?
Right. I mean, that's amazing. Let's continue on with this tape, and let's look at now the nature of them calling this white supremacy, right? All right, here we go.
Once again, a young black man's death at the hands of police is sparking demands for change regarding police brutality and systemic racism in America.
Yeah, all black police officers, all their supervisors in the police department directly above them, and a black woman police chief. Boy, you can see, I tell you one thing. Putting blacks in control of police officers and putting controls of police departments, that's really good for black people, isn't it?
I saw an absolutely almost comical, but, you know, absurd, and just I didn't know what way to. You see this black judge? She was a black woman judge, and she's just been put in prison for an incident in 2014 for her corruption. Yeah. She was lying about her brother to protect her brother or something, and she was dragged out of court. I mean, literally dragged out like a floppy body. I mean, the whole thing was ridiculous. But, it doesn't matter what happens. When you point out that, you know, same over here, when you put the argument forth that if Black Lives Matter, then maybe the young black youths should stop killing each other, and you point out that the majority, vast majority of black
vast
people are
majority.
Killed by other black people, they say...
And yeah, again, blacks kill...
It's because they're disadvantaged and they're kept down as part of the systemic racism. They always find a way to blame
blacks
white people.
Commit 10, look, blacks commit 10 at least 8 times per capita more violent, vile, disgusting, horrible crime.
Sexual
to white people.
Sexual
including the last time we had the figures, I don't really even publish them anymore because they don't want to. For the last 40 years, we have the figures clearly. And whites, all right, were white men raped black women at less than 1% of what black men raped white women in terms of cross-racial crimes. You know, 1%. I mean, 99% of the cross-racial crimes are black males against white females, not the other way around. And this is a perfect example of the demonization of us by the media. Let me play that tape so you can hear it.
This is about structural racism. It's about white supremacy, but it's also about a system of toxic masculinity, patriarchy, and an overall system of oppression.
So it is nonsense that black and brown officers have not been part of the problem of systemic racism and policing.
Yes, racism, and the role it almost certainly played in the death of Tyree Nichols in Memphis. The idea that black and brown people can't internalize white supremacist tropes, narratives, ways of seeing the world is something that I, as a brown man, am telling you is just patently untrue. Okay, so...
TV anchors who went to Princeton and live in overwhelmingly white neighborhoods are telling you that a killing perpetrated by five black men against a black man is the fault of white people. Okay.
Well, listen, but, you know,
in New York, a female agitator or rioter just punched two police officers, and the DA in Manhattan, Alvin Bragg, released the attacker from jail without bail.
Anyway, so there you go.
By that logic, which is, of course, the argument they've internalized, you know, white racism and oppressionism, maybe are we allowed to internalize Judaism?
Yeah, no, we're not. We're not allowed to show Jewish racism, the fact that Jews have thousands of organizations fighting for their political interests, fighting for wars that they think will advance their interests, which is going to kill our own people for lies, like the Iraq war and like the Ukraine war, which we're going to get into in a second if we have any time for it. But let me give you one more thing. This is good to cap this off. If we don't have time for the Ukraine issue today, we can pass that up for, you know, I can do that for a show tomorrow.
Well, I just want to say one thing on the Ukraine thing, and it's very important. The Germans are on the streets.
Well, we're not quite finished the thing yet. Let me see if I can get this last little tape, and then I want to hear that from you. We'll definitely get to that point. Okay, here we go. Let me see here. All right, here you go.
This topic, she's written about policing for many years.
He's now interviewing Heather McDonald.
Book called When Race Trumps Merit. She joins us tonight.
Heather McDonald.
Heather McDonald, thank you so much for coming on. This is the tragedy, this is one of them, that you predicted, I think. How would you assess what we saw in Memphis?
Well, this makes me long for the days, Tucker, when we heard ad nauseum from academia that blacks cannot be racist because racism equals power plus privilege, and blacks, by definition, have neither of them. Now we're at the point where racism is a virtually non-falsifiable proposition. My favorite example of this new paradigm is the claim that the fact that the five officers in Memphis were indicted for murder is itself a product of racism. So, you know, what's an ally to do? The only thing you can do is absolve favored victim groups of all accountability. But the larger point is that the post-George Floyd horrors never stopped coming. We lost thousands more black lives to drive-by shootings, not a single one of those protested by Black Lives Matter activists, and police departments are now facing a retention and recruitment crisis at the same time that the pressure is escalating yet again to hire by race, pressure that began under the Obama administration and even was more longstanding. Well, letting race trump merit is always a disaster, whether it's in policing or in medical training. And the premise for this diversity hiring is not even true. It is not the case that the more black officers you have on a force, the less excessive force or brutality you have. The Obama administration itself found that in Philadelphia, black and Hispanic officers were more likely to shoot unarmed blacks than white officers. A 2017 study found that the more black officers on a force, the more black civilians were killed. So this whole story, the narrative of police racism and the narrative that getting rid of standards will solve our crime or policing problems is completely false, and it's going to get worse.
Yeah, and by the way, and by the way, she's never interviewed on these other networks. Tucker will have her on. But these are all facts. So it is factual that black police officers and other non-white police officers kill black people at a much, much more higher rate than white people do. And that's pretty doggone amazing. And like you said, the more black officers in the force, the more problems they have with blacks killing each other. And the truth is, again, everything is everything's totally reversed, because the white police officers, you know, I think if I was a white police officer, I'd certainly much rather be policing in a white neighborhood, right? And white people and white cities and white towns. For God's sakes. Every time they go into the ghetto, you know, they're risking their lives. They're not come back to their kids.
Yeah, they're not paid enough for that sort of nonsense, you know?
But the truth is that white police officers are being murdered, you know, on a massive scale, hurt and harmed, and also facing a lifetime in prison just for trying to enforce the law and protecting blacks from killing each other. So this is exactly the opposite of all of this narrative that they give
us. Of course, of course.
So say the thing about Ukraine real quick, because we only got about a minute or so.
Well, I was going to say the encouraging thing about this Ukraine Ukraine is the Germans themselves. In fact, some of the banners are actually saying this is our red line or something like that. They're out marching against the fact that Scholz sent tanks to Ukraine, which is good because you haven't seen much pushback on this, you know, including in this country. So it's good that the Germans are coming out and saying, listen, enough of this nonsense. So they're out in their droves there in Germany.
Okay, well, hang around a minute. Thank you so much for being on my show. How can people reach you real quickly?
Well, tune in to Last Man Standing on Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm also on with Richard Carey and Beyond the Official Narrative at Midday Central. My show's last show on Sunday night, or you can pick it up in the archives on Monday because it's a late show.
Thank you, Paul.
Odyssey. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your great work. So I'm going to close this out, folks, by just saying and just noting again, this problem that we're having with police enforcement, the problem that we're having with mass murders that blacks are doing, and the destruction of our legal system, our court system, our prison system, everything like this, and the hatred and the weaponization of blacks against white people. And again, I go back to the Justice Department study for cross-racial crime in terms of violent crimes, vicious crimes, robbery, rape, carjacking, assault, unbelievable crimes, all right? 560,000, that's more than 500,000 white victims, 67,000 black victims, all right? And per capita, blacks commit vastly more murder, armed robbery, and all those kinds of, and rapes and assaults than whites do, and those kind of things. So this is amazing stuff. We're the victims here, and we have a media that lies to us every day. The reason we have this problem is not because, really, there's not. We had blacks in the country years ago. We always had a higher black crime rate, and we had some problems because of it, and also other costs of society because of that. But the reason why this has become to a toxic level, this has become to a level of existential nature for our people, as well as the immigration, which is going to make us a minority and completely take away our volition, take away our freedom in our own country. They're already taking away our freedom of speech. It's not because of blacks. It's because of a mass earlier immigration and earlier change of Jews taking over so much in this country, our media, our government, our campaign financing. We can just keep on and our big pharma. It's just amazing. That's the real reality of it. We have another racist, extremely racist group that's taken us over. And unless we stand up against that, we will never survive as a people. And that's true not only in America, but in the entire Western world. And that's why I'm talking about this issue. And it's also important for all the people of the world if you really want peace and justice on this planet. Thanks so much, folks. We'll be back with you tomorrow. Go to davidduke.com. You can write me at Box 188, Mandeville, Louisiana, 70470. Send us some support. Thanks. Bye. Thank you.
dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs. For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste by going to rbnhemppaste.com. That's rbnhemppaste.com.
Radio. Only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.